Today's case show will be on case 23 in the Blue Rock Collection. Hofuku points to Myohocho. Engo's introduction. Jade is tested by fire, gold by stone, a sword by a hair, water by a staff. If in Zen training the degree of one's attainment and one's progress is known by one's words and phrases, one's attitudes and actions, one's coming and going, one's asking and responding, tell me, how will it be done? See the following. When Hofuku and Choke went out for a walk, Hofuku, pointing with his finger, said, "This is Myohocho." Myo means marvelous peak. Myo, marvelous, ho, peak, cho, top. Choke said, "What you say is well said, but alas." A monk related this to Kyosei, who said, "But for Choke's remark, the field would have been littered with skulls." This is Myohocho. Now weeds grow rampant. You see it clearly, but to whom could you impart it? If you, O Choke, didn't discriminate, many would never know, and their skulls would litter the field. Today is the third day of our June 2005 Sesshin, and I want to thank everybody for another excellent effort. You know, last night in the Dokusan room, people were coming in, and it was so clear that everybody is really practicing deeply. And, we all have moments on the cushion where we're just too tired to go on, we're drifting, you know, we fall asleep at times, you know. This is just a human situation. But it's clear to me that, everybody is really working very hard and doing a wonderful job. And it's thrilling to be involved in this enterprise with you, with all of you. Everyone here is making a superb effort, and as each of you come into the Dokusan room, I'm very eager to hear what you have to report. Even if you don't have an answer, that's very important to me. And I spend all of my time thinking about, not all of my time, but all the time I can, I spend thinking about Zen. And that generally means thinking about Zen practitioners. So it's really the case that I'm very eager to see you in the Dokusan room. And I'm very eager to hear what you have to say. On the other hand, you should never worry about being uninteresting or giving or letting me down in some way, because there's really no such thing. You know, if you're making an effort, well, that's all anyone can ask. That's all you can ask of yourself, right? And it's certainly all I ask, you know, and I'm thrilled when people make an effort. You know, you could go to temples in China or Japan, and you would see monks and nuns, but you wouldn't necessarily see practice like this. You know, a lot of the time, people just go through the motions. Lin Ji was always getting upset, or pretending to get upset, I guess. he would come into the temple and he'd say, "You know, you phony balonies, you know, you've got your robes, you've got your quesas, your sashes, You all have your Dharma names, and you're just sitting there thinking about lunch, you know. So you stuff your mouth with black beans and rice, and you call yourselves men of Zen, you know. In other words, they were just going through the motions. And in Japan too, you know, this is often the case. You know, it's typically people inherit a temple in Japan. In other words, your father may have been a monk, and so your job is to take over the family temple. Now, this sometimes produces really wonderful teachers who grow up in the temple atmosphere and have a marvelous insight. So, Maizumi Roshi, for example, really one of the most successful Zen teachers in the United States, really a wonderful teacher. He has many, many students because he was such a skillful and compassionate teacher. And he comes from a family of all his brothers are monks, you know, they're all Zen priests, you could say. And, you know, they all get together, or used to all get together when he was alive. And so, basically, that's the exception in Japan, I believe, from what I know. You know, many monks go to training, they're going to inherit the family temple, and they just go through the motions, you know. Genki said to me that there were a lot of such people in Japan, and Webb has reported the same thing to me, that they just, you know, they're just going through, you know, you go to one of these big training temples, Daitokuji or Eheiji, and you need to get certified, basically, to take over the family temple. So you're doing these darn sashin so you can take over the family business, you know. Enlightenment may not be high on your agenda, and it's high on the agenda of the people who are training you, but you might just want to get through it all, right, so you can get home. You know, and so that's very complicated, right? I mean, when people choose to come here, as you all have chosen to come here, and practicing, you know, with no, you're not going to inherit a temple at the end of all this, you know. I mean, we don't even have a temple, right? But it doesn't matter as long as we have a decent place to practice, because this is the heart of Zen. What we're doing here is the heart of Zen. You know, all the temples in the world can't produce this, you know, what's going on here. And, you know, if you go to Thailand, you go to, you know, Japan, there's millions of, not millions, but there's thousands of temples. But how much real practice, you know, I wonder. So here is real practice, and it's absolutely thrilling to me. And I literally, you know, lie awake thinking about, I wonder what you're going to tell me in the Dokusan room. And you know, as I say, however, you know, don't ever be embarrassed if you just come in and say, I don't know what to say. I mean, because believe me, I've been there, you know, literally hundreds of times, you know. So that's just no, you know, being lost is not a disgrace, you know, at all. You know, not knowing what to do next or being confused, you know. So thank you for your excellent effort, all of you. Now this koan is a wonderful little koan. When Hofuku and Chote went out for a walk. They're leaving the temple and they're going out for a walk. Hofuku, pointing with his finger, said, this is Myohocho. This is a beautiful, this is like a Fuji or like one of the great Emeshan in China or Mount Rainier in Seattle. He says, this is Myohocho, a beautiful mountain, isn't it? Choke says, what you say is well said, but basically he says, isn't it a shame you said it? See, what a pity. It is beautiful, but what a pity to say so. You know, this is really a very important principle, you know, because our way in Zen is a very unusual path. You know, we come here to practice, and you'll notice that we recite sutras, but we do so in a language we really don't understand. And that might be the best way to recite sutras, you know, actually. There was a fellow who was sitting with us for a while, and he went away, and he came back and he saw we were still reciting these sutras in either Japanese or phonetic version of Chinese. And he said, "Are you still reciting those in Japanese?" You know, and he thought, so that was the craziest thing. But it's really wonderful that we don't worry about the content of the sutras, because we're not interested in studying sutras. That's not really our path. You know, the Buddha did not actually say, you know, study my teachings carefully and do what I say, you know. In fact, at the end of his life he said, you know, you have to work it out yourself. You know, just practice diligently. And he said, don't believe things because they're written down. Don't believe them because they're tradition. Don't believe them because authority figures tell you it's so. You know, so the path of the Buddha is not a scriptural study. So we only spend like a few minutes on all of this. We've turned the sutras into something else. It's no longer about the content. It's about losing ourselves in the process of reciting. See, so we've freed ourselves from content, and we can just be in the pure act of recitation. You know, and so when you recite the sutra, you can use your hara to squeeze the breath out. If you do this, you won't run out of breath so quickly. And gradually you'll notice that you can, you know, it's hard at 4:30 in the morning, but you'll gradually notice that you can enter sort of like sutra reciting samadhi. It's really interesting, you know. For years I just thought, why do we do these stupid sutras, you know? On the other hand, I was glad we weren't doing more sitting, you know. So it was like a trade-off, right? You know? But then, you know, I began to really get into the sutras. I began to really sort of feel good reciting the sutras. And I began to get sort of energized, you know, especially with that first sutra. You know, when Genki Roshi wanted us to go really fast through that first sutra, you know, and he could just, we used to recite the Diamond Sutra, which is even longer, every afternoon. And Genki would just be like, you know, and by the end, he was reciting it by himself. And he'd get so mad at us, you know, he would just be so pissed off, you know. Really, I remember just him just being so furious, he almost threw his sutra book, you know. It was like, what's wrong with you people, you know? You're supposed to be training, you know. And but the point is, it's not about the content, it's about the act. You know, repeatedly saying these syllables, you begin to get into a kind of flow, and you can begin to feel very energized. You know, it's like catching a wave. You know, at first you're tired and you're sitting on the cushion and it's like shudo move, but you know, after a while, you know, the drum is dum 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 dum, and you begin to say, well, all right, why don't I try? You know, why don't I recite this a little bit? You know, and then you begin to feel, you're working with your hara, and the sutras are different at different tempos, right? You know, the second one is very fast, you know, and then some are state, the third one is very fast, the second one is very stately, you know, so this is like a kind of a chi workout, as a matter of fact. I'm not rationalizing. This is what it's really all about, you know. So we've rescued the experience of sutra recitation from content, and we've rescued it from intellectual discrimination and the kind of futility of philosophical thinking. You know, so this is really a great improvement over sutra study, I would say. And it's part of the spirit of our path, you know. Similar thing with koan training. You know, koans look like intellectual conundrums. You know, so what is the sound of one hand clapping? See, now, you know, really and truly, there are people who have written especially in Japan, scholarly articles on this from like a phenomenological standpoint or existential interpretation of the sound. Really, there are actually books about this. But this has nothing to do with Buddhism or Zen, actually. You know, my second teacher, Kangan Roshi, Glenn Webb, went to Japan originally because he wanted to study a Japanese art. He had no interest in practicing. And he went to the temple, very famous Myoshinji, which has a lot of classic Japanese art treasures. And he was amazed to see that the monks had no understanding of the content, symbolic content of anything. So for example, in a Zen temple, there are you'll often see this design. It's a triangle, a square, and a circle. And this is like a very, very important symbolic representation in Japanese Zen. So, you know, you could say the triangle is trikaya. You know, you could say the circle is a symbol of emptiness, and so on. But the monks, when they're asked about this, a scholar comes to the temple and says, "What does this mean?" They just go, "I don't know. You know, circle, square, triangle. You know, case closed." And the scholar goes away and thinks, "What a bunch of dolts, right? What a bunch of dolts." But actually, misses the point. You know, there's a beautiful, thinking is very small. Words are very small. And they're very limited in what they can express. And people think that language is the limits of their world. You know, so when you're given a koan, you might think this is a kind of an intellectual question. But, you know, basically, the way to work with a koan is really to put aside any attempt to think it through, you know, or to reason it through. This is the beauty of, say, breath perception koan or the mu koan, right? There's nothing to think through about breath, ultimately. It seems dead simple. It's just like reciting the sutra. Boom, boom, boom. So, you just sujo mohan day after day, same thing, but you experience beyond the words this elation, this energy, this sense of connection, right? Or you can. Maybe you haven't yet, but sooner or later, if you have to recite these sutras at every sesshin and you're planning to do a lifetime of sesshin, might as well give it a shot, you know? But with koan training too, you know, sound of one hand clapping has nothing to, you know, it's not really a philosophical issue. You could spend a lot of time, but there's a way of experiencing reality which is beyond words. And it's very hard for humans to do this, but this is what sesshin is constructed to allow people to do. You know, so basically, after 2 days of sesshin, believe it or not, you may not feel very pure, very clear, etc., etc., but your mind has become much sharper and much more calm, stable, and aware than when you arrived. You know, we've been going through this difficult process of purifying body, mind, and heart. And it's possible now to experience something beyond words. You know, beyond words. So, you know, when you work with the koan, the point of working with the koan is to enter deep samadhi, you know, deep, that unshakable stillness. Yeah? unshakable stillness. And I think you've felt that, right? You know, it's like you suddenly feel like you've fallen into something. It's like you're a fish on land, and suddenly when you're in deep samadhi, you feel like, oh my gosh, I'm in the water. You know, you're a fish on land, and you've just landed in the water, and you go, now this is more like it, right? It's a wonderful feeling, right? You know, all of a sudden, you're in something, and you just feel so much better. You know, this is a samadhi, can feel like this, or can feel like you're disappearing, or you're floating. Electricity might be flowing. These are all sort of samadhi experiences. We can describe them in words, but they're really beyond words, right? So, you know, you have to enter samadhi, and then you work with your koan. So when you're in breath observation samadhi, all you have to do is keep keep pulling the mind back to the breath. Thoughts begin to recede, or thoughts become like clouds passing in the sky. You know, so this thought comes, you know, normally we're possessed by our thoughts. It's like demonic possession, really and truly. You know, thoughts are just bits of ideas that have been circulating, you know, for time immemorial. You know, so these ideas, these bits of information are flowing around us, and we construct little systems out of them. And then they sort of take over our lives, and they prevent us from seeing what's right in front of us, you know, really and truly. So, you know, when you begin to enter samadhi, this very calm state, you know, you begin to have a different experience of the world, it's a very more immediate experience of the world. You know, thoughts are coming and going, but they're no longer steering you. They're no longer steering you. It's like you're being steered by something else. You know, this is very interesting. You know, it's like your big mind begins to take over, and you begin to notice things that you might not otherwise notice. Strange things. You know, it is interesting, isn't it, that there may indeed be this bigger mind that's behind a little mind. You know, I'm just fascinated by the fact that we often see things that have great meaning for us, but we didn't choose to see them. You know, so when you get up in the morning and you walk outside and you look over and you see a cardinal sitting in the tree, you didn't choose to see the cardinal, but it might move you so deeply. Why did you look at the cardinal instead of the grass? Or you walked out of the zendo a few hours ago and you looked at the grass and the greenness was so vivid you wanted to cry. Why did you look at the grass instead of the sky? You could say, well, it was just an accident, but maybe not an accident. It's like there's this deeper intelligence behind our little mind. You know, this even happened to me this morning. You know, sometimes big mind lets me down, and that's the way it goes, you know, but sometimes I catch the wave. I was trying to find the, you know, to make the umeboshi tea, I have to have this little cage that holds the plums, and then I put it in the water, right? And I looked up on the shelf where it's usually kept, and it wasn't there. Okay? And it's now 5 of 5. So I have to get the tea ready so we can get the sutras done so we can sit down and do our wonderful Zen. And I looked around the kitchen and thought, oh shit, where is it? You know? It's a big kitchen. It's full of stuff. It's a little object. It's like, you know. And I turned and looked, and it was in with the spices. And it was the first thing I looked at. And I thought, you know, big mind, thank you, you know, thank you. It's very much like koan training, you know. I was at a loss, And I looked over and there it was, you know. I guess I was, you know, it just connected with me. You know, but I really, so often in life, we make decisions using big mind, and we don't know why we're doing what we're doing, but there's like this deeper intelligence, you know, that guides us. One person told me that, you know, he had not really planned to come to Sesshin, but at the last minute he just had to come to Sesshin, you know, and so showed up. Here I am. And said sort of like, well, I don't really know why I've come, you know, I don't know why I've come here, but I just had to come. And it's like, oh, that is just, you know, exactly, you know. There's the little mind doesn't have the answer, you know, but the bigger mind has the answer. And sometimes we get out of the way and let big mind show us where to look, you know. And so with Zen practice, you don't have to figure anything out, you know. It doesn't require analysis, really, or deduction, or interpretation. As soon as you're in the business of interpreting your experience, you know you're a million miles from the practice of Zen. You know, all we have to do is sort of empty ourselves out, and the answer will present itself to us. Just like that, suddenly it's like, I'm at a loss, I have 2 minutes to finish this, and then I look over and it's like, bam, there it is. Thank you, thank you. You know, it doesn't always happen. I could have looked over and there was the cardamom, you know. And then now I have to start, you know, you have to do the hard work, right? But you know, who knows where it was put? You know, so trying to figure it out might not work. I looked in with the so-called utensil drawer, which is like this box of junk, right? It wasn't in there. So logic's out the window. You know, just have to start groping. This is just like koan practice. But, you know, so Zen practice is not about figuring anything out. And actually, it's not about appreciation either. So it is wonderful when we feel good and we feel happy. That's like a byproduct of Zen. But if we're trying to feel good or we're trying to feel happy, we're probably not going to make any progress with our training. And also, we're probably not going to be happy very long, as a matter of fact. So, you know, Zen is really not about clinging to blissful moments or joyous experiences. You know, that too is a kind of attachment to ideas, right? It's like as soon as you have an experience, you know, that's wonderful, you want to repeat it. But nothing repeats in the real world, see? In the world of ideas, things are always the same. Every time we see a cloud, we say cloud, right? But in the real world, this is not so. So every experience is quite unique. And when we're in samadhi, we begin to experience the uniqueness of things. Yeah. So, very important simply to clear away the mental junk. Or another way to put it is, make yourself small. My second teacher, Kangan Roshi, always used to say, make yourself small. And I never really appreciated that until I had my first real experience of samadhi. And, you know, Webb would always say, you have to be small, you have to be small. You know? It's just, oh, yes, yes, small. You know? And, you know, I thought this was like an ethical thing, you know, so I should be more humble, I should take less food and things like that. But then one day I was sitting on the cushion and I had a few samadhi experiences, but I began to have this very deep samadhi experience where I felt like I was literally like draining away or emptying out. Yeah? And I realized this is what Webb was talking about. You know, he was pointing to this experience where you just disappear on the cushion. And when this happens, there's very little thought. There's just a kind of awareness, field of awareness. And there's little inputs like, you know, pain in the legs and so on, and there's a little bit of time awareness, but not too much. You know, and in this state, one is very perceptive and very receptive. But it's not a state in which there's any reflection. It's all, you know, pure experience. It's just like the field of pure experience. You know. Now, at some point, you have to you come into the Dokusan room, and I'll ask you. I'll say, well, what's happening with your sit? You have to use words, but what I really want from you is just an explanation. You know, I just want you to tell me this happened, and then this happened, and this happened. And this is like a very important discipline in Zen, just being truthful about what happens. Because we want to interpret. We want to say, well, I encountered oneness. You know, you say, well, what do you mean you encountered oneness? Well, I felt really good. You know, I felt really good, or I felt connected to the sound of the bird. You know, that's a better answer than I felt oneness. See, because oneness is much more abstract kind of statement. The closer you can get to the experience in Dokusan, the better. You know, I really didn't understand this. I really didn't understand this when I was training at first, because I very much thought that I was supposed to say something profound. It took me a long time to have the courage just to come in to see Genki Roki and say things like, well, you know, when my hands disappear, I feel a little better and I have less pain. It was so prosaic, right? I wanted to come in and go, all is one, you know, and not one, you know, and this sort of thing. And I wanted to have a big explosive experience. But, you know, when I just came in and I said, you know, when I watched my breath, I actually felt like, for a minute, I felt like I was falling off a cliff, and then everything was blank. You know, this was like, this was, you know, he said, this is the best answer you've ever given. You know, that's wonderful. It's just, I just described what was happening. So, you know, the secret of Zen is very simple. You know, it's watching the breath, or calling Mu until you begin to disappear on the cushion. And then you just keep returning to that blankness, returning to your breath, or returning to that blankness, and you don't have to do anything special beyond that. That everything will just happen automatically. It'll just be like the tea basket will appear in front of you, and you'll know what to do. It's like a divine possession, right? You'll suddenly know what to do. And how will you know? Because you'll want to do something. You know, I've used this example before, but how do you know when you want to go to the bathroom? You know? If you go to the library, there's actually no branch of philosophy called, you know, bathroomology. You know, when does man need to go to the bathroom? You know, when should he go, and when must he go? You just know, right? It's like, I have to go to the, man, I have to go to the bathroom. This morning we were supposed to have tea, but I had to go to the bathroom. You know? So nature calls, right? Nature. This is a bigger mind says you must go to the bathroom. And this is how it really works. You know, it's like that. So, you know, if you feel like you should open your mouth, if you're in deep samadhi, and your body is you're in it, and you feel you're saying the koan, and you feel like you should open your eyes, for some reason that makes no sense, open your eyes. If you're sitting on the cushion and you feel all of a sudden like, you know, your ears have come alive, and you feel like you, for some reason I'm hearing everything, and it's very crisp, please keep listening. You know, it doesn't have to quote unquote make sense. It's like you're getting instructions from big mind, see? Getting instructions from big mind. And you just have to be receptive to the instructions. So usually the problem is we're so worried about whether we're going to be successful at this, or we're so worried about this or that, and We're so busy with our thoughts that we're not getting the signals that Big Mind is sending us. So all we have to do is watch the breath or call Mu and just keep emptying ourselves out, and the signals start coming loud and clear. They don't come in words. It's not like a voice is going, you're going to hear a voice and it will say, you know, go into the Dokusan room and clap your hands. It won't be like that. But you might actually find that your hands start burning, or that you feel this desire. You feel like you want to clap your hands. And when you clap your hands, you feel very good, right? Feel good about it. Now, you know, you might be skeptical about this, but, you know, there is a deeper intelligence. And, you know, creative people know this. You know, creative people know all about this. You know, there many people I know who are really gifted artists and writers will say, you know, I didn't write this, you know. Or you'll hear novelists on the radio and or on TV, and they'll say things like, you know, I didn't really understand this character until she started doing X, Y, and Z, and then I realized, oh, so that's who she is. This is the supposed author of the story. But the person will say, the character explained herself to me, or the character began to take shape, and I was surprised to see that she turned out to be X, see. So, you know, creative people are aware that there's this deeper intelligence. You know, so this is a little bit like that. But it's also a little bit like a science, right? Because we're observing the world. We're just going to observe with a kind of blank mind or purified awareness. So no special effort is necessary other than the effort it takes to empty yourself. So if you just keep emptying yourself on the cushion, wonderful things are going to happen to you. You begin to live more and more natural way, yeah? More and more natural life. So this is just, you know, one person, I don't think this person will mind my sort of saying this, but one person came into Dokusan at one point in the Sashin and said, you know, the funny thing is I've been in pain all day, but I feel really happy. I feel really wonderful. See, this is contact with that deeper intelligence. You know, it's that contact with it. It's like going home, returning to our true home, and it's wonderful. As soon as you start, you know, when you have to do Dokusan, when you have to come into Dokusan, don't worry about the answer. Just keep emptying yourself out. Come in and do whatever you know feels appropriate. If your koan is Mu, just come in and call Mu. You know, don't worry about, should it be loud or should it be soft? You know, I wonder, you know, what should I, that was the same Mu I gave last time. Maybe I need to Mu, hoo, hoo, hoo. Something a little different, you know. That's a million miles from it. See, it's like catching a wave, right? If you're a surfer, you just have to hang out on the beach and you watch the waves, right? You don't make the waves happen. You here comes a wave, and this looks like it could be the big wave. So you paddle over, and then it's nothing, you know. Then there's another wave. You paddle over, and you get on your board, and it turns out to be rather a disappointment, you know. Then another, okay. Sooner or later, you're just going to catch the wave. And you're just going to catch, and it's going to be a thrilling ride, because Big Mind is going to possess you, you know. All you have to do is be available. So there is a lot of work involved in Zen. There's no question about that, right? And it means sitting on the cushion and watching the breath and emptying yourself out. That's the work. But don't try to answer your koan. Just try to be empty, and the answer will come. See, this is a secret of Zen practice. So, you know, don't try to solve the koan. Just try to be empty. And then the mind becomes fresh and clear. It may not feel fresh and clear in the middle of it all. You're struggling with your pain. There's thoughts are buzzing around your head. But you're gradually opening yourself up to deeper intelligence, deeper awareness. And that's your true self. So please prepare the way for its return to your life. When Hofuku and Choke went out for a walk, Hofuku, pointing with his finger, said, "This is Myohocho. Isn't it beautiful?" Choke said, "What you say is very well said, but how sad to say so. How sad to put it into words." A monk related this to Kyosei, who said, "But for Choke's remark, the field would have been littered with skulls." In other words, you know, that poor guy, that poor monk, would have gone through his whole life never having contact with greater awareness, greater intelligence. See? Just having beautiful experiences. You know, very shallow mode of practice. So, Secho's verse, "This is Myohocho, the highest peak, is your true self." Now weeds grow rampant. You see it clearly, but to whom could you impart it? If you, O Choke, didn't discriminate, many would never know and their skulls would litter the field. See, even Choke uses words. So the problem is not words or no words. Where does your speech come from? You know, when you say mu, that's a word too, but it's coming out of your greater intelligence, your true nature. When your mind is empty, when your heart and body are purified, and you're sitting in this state of deep samadhi, and you feel suddenly this rush of energy or this stirring of vitality. Or you feel this desire to open your mouth, or open your eyes, or put your hand on your head, see. You may also feel the desire to say something. But now you've become an instrument of your true nature, see. This is like, make yourself an instrument of your true nature. And then it's going to be really something else.